this is rolling now, just for some information. I'm not going to use all this stuff, but
so you actually edit the stuff, huh?
Yes.
So
but
I can.
Anyway,
I
so
can.
It's, now we have pandemic coverage plus all our normal coverage, you know, fires and crashes in court and councils and all that stuff. So we're busy, and it's a challenge.
You're to be congratulated. I mean, so many media have gone down the tubes, or else they've been absorbed by large conglomerates and they lose their regional, local identity and, to a great degree, their mission. I mean, in the past, we always try to support the Daily Item through advertising and local radio stations, too. After a while, I was lucky enough not to have to advertise. It really pissed off the Daily Item. You have the highest identity recognition of any studio in a huge area, and you do no advertising. I said, well, we do our own marketing, our
right.
internal marketing. That was
before
the web, even. Mm-hmm. So, but you're to be congratulated because you don't have a – you've got a tough area, a tough business.
Right. Well, and they are switching to digital. You know, everything that you hear on the radio goes on social media. We're still working on Facebook and Instagram. And,
yeah.
Geocaching. And,
I don't even know what that means.
Well, it's when an ad pops up on your phone when you're near a particular business.
Oh, okay.
You know, we do that. We're doing short videos for people for them to put on Facebook.
Sure. Not Chad Evans, is it?
Yes, it's his studio. Yes, that's his.
I tell you, you guys just recycle old shit. Sorry about that. Tell him I said that.
Yeah, we have,
tell him I said that, okay?
Well, myself included, I left in 97, and Roger contacted me, I think, right around 2000, and we kind of went back and forth. And then I came back.
Just like that pain in the ass Drew Kelly, I mean.
Yeah, he's on the Valley. Just the Valley now, so. But he volunteered to be a equipment schlepper at an upcoming event. They had an opening.
Well, if I ever met a schlep,
yes. Okay. Well,
you may save any of these quips that you like. It's fine with me.
All on tape.
Well, I got to ask you something first. So how long are we doing this?
10 minutes.
Oh. Oh, bless you. Bless you. You're prolific and efficient.
Yeah, this isn't an hour long round
table. Oh, bless you. Life is crazy. Of course, I'll take an hour.
You want an hour?
No. I passed out last night at 9:30. My wife got a COVID shot, the booster. And thank God she didn't have a terrible reaction. I mean, I was down and out in fevers and stuff. But she got real tired, and I had a really busy day, and I worked out. And so at 9:30, I fell asleep watching TV, and then 10 o'clock, we went up to bed. 10:30, I was fast asleep. 2:30 in the morning. This never happens to me. So at 3, I got up, went to my desk, worked 3.5 hours, got a ton of stuff. I mean, it just is not stopping. We're working on so many huge priorities. And so it's been wild. Okay, my name is John Gardner. What have I been doing for the last 50 years? Too much of some stuff and not enough another, but it's been a decent balance in life.
What's happening to Lewisburg Studio?
Lewisburg Studio has a life of its own. To me, it's been like raising my kids. I raised my kids not necessarily to be in my own image, but I raised them to be strong, independent, capable, creative, adaptable. I believe you don't create products or things in life. It's best to create a process or something that perpetuates. So we've developed a studio that has a name brand, regional recognition for great quality, creativity, and, you know, incomparable, caring, capable service. Oh, my gosh, we take care of our customers. And so because of that, I was contacted by a regional photographer a little while ago after the pandemic who is a creative genius and has a spectacular personality. And you'll hear her name at the retirement celebration. We're going to introduce her.
But not until then.
Not until then. We're trying to keep this... And we're waiting for the sales agreement to be signed, too. So that's good business. But I think it's going to be a done deal. And she's going to be taking over. She's interested in performing the same type of work, you know, in portraiture. She's going to pick up. She's already been doing weddings. I mean, I did weddings for, as you know, for about 30 years before I backed off, not because I was not capable of doing them, but my goodness, I wanted weekends to be able to see my kids again and have some time for my family and my wife and for friends. So she's going to be doing weddings, but providing the other services that we've done in the past, senior portraits, family portrait. She's gifted at all that. There'll be editorial, commercial photography, event photography. And we also do a really great business with something called copy and restoration work. So people bring in old faded photographs or they want some type of graphic design work done with photographs that they have. We can scan them, reconstitute, redevelop them, and then put them in very creative formats for people's use. So all that's going to continue.
That's the goal. And your staff? When I see three people, I'm assuming there's more.
Oh, my goodness. At one point, there were 15, Mark, and that was not fun in life. At that stage, I had three businesses. I had the Lewisburg Photo Shop. I had the Lewisburg Studio, and then we had the Art and Custom Framing Gallery. And I ended up selling the Photo Shop and focusing on what I love the most. Two of the three are staying with us, and the photographer and her husband are going to be working here. The husband's going to be probably doing the framing, custom framing and production work. He's got another job also. You ask very good questions. You're smarter than you look.
How do you do that?
That's something that it took me a long time to realize. Intuitively, I felt I was doing it. But, I didn't get out much. I often didn't have a chance to compare my work with other professional photographers. And after a number of years, I started looking around. I said, whoa, we're way different. But thank you for asking. I mean, the most important thing to me is to carry the essence, to capture the essence of a person. I can get anybody to smile. And I can do it so quickly that it's a nice picture. And I could have made just as much money taking nice pictures of people as I could taking a lot more time and creating real works of personal, emotional, artistic art. I read people well. I understand them. I listen to them. I observe them. I get a real feeling for what's important to them in life. So, Mark, and I photograph billionaires. So let's use an example of somebody that's got an incredible amount of money. Let's say a man. And he comes in here, and it's funny. He's just as scared to get his picture taken as a shy little kid or a pimpled teenager because he's there saying, okay, I'm supposed to look important. And how do I do that? Like I'm in front of a board meeting or this or that. That's not what it is. We sit down and I talk. I don't care if it's a doctor or a business person or a professor or a teacher. And the last thing we talk about is the picture and the camera. We talk about who they are, what they, where they come from, where they were born, how they got to this point in life, what their mission is, what they love doing, what their experiences are. And when they do this, they're not thinking about the camera. They're being themselves. And that business person, a lot of times, I'm not going to generalize, but a lot of times we'll talk about their parents and they'll smile and they, you could just see that, holy moly, their mom and dad were proud of me or proud of them. And if they were still alive this day, they would be just approving that he's carrying on and accomplishing so much, that he's taking care of his family, that he's ethical, that he's moral, that he's doing something for his community, that he's setting goals. You talk about that with somebody, and whoa, you see what comes out of their prayer. Then they're comfortable. And then they don't have a stick up their butt when they're sitting down or standing up trying to look important. It's then they're being who they are. And that's the most beautiful portrayal of a person that anybody can do. And that's the spark. But yeah, I mean, I learned a lot of this from my parents. And they were brilliant. They needed to do this not just because of their professional training, but just because of their lives. They were survivors of the Holocaust. They learned to read people very well. They always had their eyes open. They could tell good people. They knew who to be afraid of or wary of. And I observed all that. And I studied psychology and had a lot of friends. And I was always drawn to people. So, you know, when my wife and I take a walk through a town or something, at the end of the walk, she'll tell me all the things she saw, and I didn't notice any of them. But I could tell her about every person I came across.
So you try to gather this essence of a person. Okay? So you gather that, and that's really just one of the ingredients in the recipe. You finally get this essence of them. But then you mix it with the camera and the background and your words and their mood and their interest and what they want to photograph. You achieve this, I'm going to call it a nirvana, because I think you hit this pinnacle of connection. Tell our audience about those moments when you two, you and the subject, are you really won in a fashion.
Your questions are amazing, Mark. I love them.
Well, but tell me about this moment. Thank you for the compliment. Now tell me about that moment. I've seen it. You took my wedding picture.
Yeah.
So I know it happens.
Ooh. Well, that's good. That's yours and not mine. Okay. Nobody has asked me this before, but it's stuff I'm going to be talking about at my retirement celebration. About the essence of what a beautiful portrait is. And yeah, you need to connect with the person. You need to understand who they are and get their emotional expression. But there's all this other stuff that you're looking at the same time. You're looking at technical things. You're looking at, you know, the focal point. You're looking at the exposure. You're looking at the depth of field. You're looking at ASA, you're looking at ISO, you're looking at artistic issues, you're looking at how you're cropping everybody, where they are in the frame to draw attention and have maximal impact. You're looking at foreground and background relationships. You're looking at the contrast and lighting. You're looking how the lighting highlights the subject and tones down the less important parts of the picture. I talked about color, yeah. I mean,
this connection, that's what I'm asking about, is this connection. You reach a connection with the person where, like, one photograph with a slightly different pose or with something moved flows right out of the previous one and into the next.
I... I keep working on things. Before I always photograph somebody, I warn them that I make three different faces. And I never realized I made these faces when I photographed people until, like, it was probably 35 years ago or a little more that I was photographing a young woman. And we're having a great time, and the portraits are excellent. But all of a sudden she said, "John, why are you making that face?" And I went, I didn't know I was making a face. So I went into the dressing room right over here, and I looked in the mirror, and I made this face that I felt I was making, and went, "Holy moly, that is one scary expression." And I started thinking about what I was doing, and I realized that I go through a process when I photograph that goes from creative thinking to analytical thinking to emotional expression. And, you know, people help me understand this. So the first time I'm making the creative face, it's when I'm just like looking dumber than dirt, and I'm soaking in everything about the person. They're talking, and I just sort of go. For you viewers, Mark is noticing my really stupid face now. It's like I'm totally clueless. My mouth is hanging open. My eyes are sort of not blinking and blankly staring. And I'm absorbing. It's just free association. All these concepts come in, and boom, I have an idea of how this person should be expressing themselves and what the concepts are to put together. So the next face I make is the face that scared the young woman. It's the other side of the brain working. It's the left side of the brain, analytical thinking. You ready for the face? It's got. You hear Mark laughing now. It's a furrowed brow. It's a furrowed brow, and it's taking the little details, putting them together so that the entire gestalt works. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So you put that together, and then you get the emotional expression and the pose and stuff, and then I make the third face, which is like this. I love it, I love it, I love it. I tease people, I turn French, you know. I tease people that I've got three hemispheres in my brain instead of two. And that's nirvana. That's when, boom. And I tell people, a lot of people think I schmooze or I'm just BSing, you know, saying, oh, I love it, it's gorgeous. I cannot lie. If I try to lie, it'd be ridiculous. You'd see it written all over my face. But when we get that feeling, and they know it, they get excited. I say, boom, we got it. And then sometimes I'll show them the back of the camera now, which is wonderful with digital, and they go, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. So it's a partnership, Mark. I mean, we're working. It's a dance. It's a creative dance. It's not my creativity. It's a combination of the subject, their perception, their creative way of expressing that, unique way of expressing themselves, and my creative way of interpreting it.
And what's it like when happens? Describe that. I mean, it sounds like you're having your career.
Oh, you were something. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a joyful experience. It's emotional for both of us, gratifying. And what can I say? You know, it's really weird because you have no idea how many secrets I know about people. The experience here in the studio is very intimate. People express things, tell me things that they would tell their pastor, their therapist, their hairdresser, and bartender. Honest to gosh. And I don't tell anybody. I guard those secrets. I don't tell my wife. But we end up having a bond together that is, what can I say? It's shown by the number of wonderful relationships that we have with customers who are also friends. And it's not a superficial relationship. People come back and I remember them. I remember the details. I remember the family. I remember the stories of their life. It's something that, you know, we share together for a lifetime.
How are you going to utilize that? that gift in the years ahead.
It's the same way I shared that gift before I did this. I told you, photography does not make me who I am. Who I am helps make my photography. The studio has a mission not just to create beautiful images for people. We have shared beautiful stories about people we care about with the entire community. People walk by the windows and they see stories of other people's lives that open their eyes, interest them, and I hope to God develops compassion and empathy and friendship and caring and mutual support. Sounds like kumbaya, doesn't it? But it's the truth. There's so many disconnected people in society, so many stories that we don't know about, so many times that we haven't put ourselves in someone else's shoes. And that's been the mission of the studio and something that everybody has just relished. And they were worried that that was going to be gone, that there wasn't going to be a place to go by and look in the front window and see who was born or who accomplished what, or God knows who passed away. I mean, when somebody passed away that was dear to us, the portraits was in the front window. God knows I always showed up at their doorstep with a portrait for the funeral too, unrequested. So that's going to continue, and I'll continue that in my normal life.
What do you think about all the photographers out there today? Everybody's a photographer.
Sure. Sure. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful because so many of them are so bad, it makes us look even better. It's hilarious. And they say, well, it's digital. It's so easy. So they go out like they have a submachine gun and they think that, oh, I can photograph 1,000 times and I'm bound to get one great shot. It doesn't work that way. You photograph 1,000 times, you exhaust the person you're taking the picture of. You wasted a huge period amount of time. When I train a photographer, I train him to take one picture. Just like you're going to go out hunting deer or something. I'm not a deer hunter. I mean, I used to love to shoot my bow. But, you know, to be a great hunter, you have to understand that creature, that beautiful creature, and the habits and, you know, their motivation. And you go out, and to get the one incredible shot, you better be well-versed because you're not going to get him with a machine gun.
What do you think about the fact that everybody has a camera now?
I think it's wonderful. You know, one of my very good friends said, I'm going to Africa, you know. Well, what picture should I take to capture all these safari pictures? I said, I'd use my phone. I said, I don't want to have a camera. That's the last thing I want to take when I'm, you know, moving around and stuff. Photographs are important. It's a way of talking and sharing. So I think the more pictures people take, the better. There are always going to be people that are going to be the consummate professionals. And they're always going to have something that the rest of the people don't have. And Mark, I had an interesting experience. It was back in 1991 or something, I don't know. I was down in Nashville, and I was going to be awarded my Master of Photography degree award. It's a real tough thing to get. And I had gotten it in a pretty short period of time, and I was down there and visiting a couple friends from Lewisburg, and one of them was a singer, great singer. And she wanted a new image for her, you know, for her career. So we're going out to dinner, and she had this pink and black outfit on. And all of a sudden, I saw this big loading dock. And, you know, it was a beautiful deep blue on the brick wall or the cement walls or, I don't know, concrete. And the loading dock, what do you think, is big squares of pink and black. And I said, stop. We got out, and I took a picture. And it won a national merit, a national award. And it's called Nashville Blues. And when I would teach photography to professionals all over, I'd often show them this picture and I'd say, so tell me what the equipment was, you know, what the camera, what type of film, what lens, to test them. And this is before digital. And so they'd say, oh, it looks like Hasselblad. It looks like, you know, it's a 150 millimeter and, you know, the deep blue for Vericolor. I took it with a throwaway camera.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Well, what about social media? You know, if people post something on social media, often they won't post it without a photograph.
Yeah.
You know, so what you've done is communication here using photography. And at the same time, everybody's picked up a piece of that. Everybody's learned a little bit about what, you know, your essence was long ago. This idea that this photograph says something that the caption can't say.
I agree, and part of the reason I became, I think, a really good photographer is that I'm not great with words. You're far more articulate than I am. I mean, you're talking to me about things that are easy for me, but there are a lot of other times where, you know, I'll fumble with words. I don't write extremely well. I write like a scientist. I'm not creative with my writing. I'll read a poem that somebody writes, and it'll blow me away. Or I'll read some prose that say in three sentences what it would take me five pages to say. Photography is literally writing with light. So that's how I've learned to communicate.
Do you miss film?
What's film? Nah. Nah. There are a lot of people that I'm not. Technically, I'm a moron. I mean, there's stuff I understand about photography, but there are people that get so deep into the technical aspects that, you know, they dwarf my knowledge. No, I don't miss film at all. I'll tell you a story. I mean, 2001, we were the first studio to go digital around here. You know what the camera cost? $29,000. Everybody said I was stupid for buying it. You know, the photo lab said, I was stupid. How can you, and this doesn't have the quality of film. Well, it was close to the quality of film. And just like WKOK and QKX has gone through generations of changes, it's not just evolution, it's revolutions. We had to do the same thing. And at three or four different stages in the development of the studio, people told me how crazy I was, including from the time I was going to buy the studio. People said I was, quote, crazy. They all went bankrupt. We went from black and white to color to overnight processing. And then we bought the first 60-minute, one-hour lab. And we were the first ones to go digital. And you make those decisions, you know, with your, they have to be educated decision, but you need to make them with your gut and with some strong backbone, because there's a lot of risk involved. And if you don't do it, then you're out of the picture, just like you guys. Well?
You got to stay in the picture. What do you want to tell us, or tell me, or tell the world that nobody's ever given you, asked you, though?
I was thinking about that same thing when I was taking a shower before coming here. I come up with the best ideas in the shower or when I'm waking up in the morning. People have asked me a lot of things, and I can't say what I feel people should have asked me. They've asked me a lot of questions. I think the most important thing is that a lesson I've learned in life is to not leave important messages unsaid. That I've lived my life listening to others and expressing myself to others, either through photography or intellectually or emotionally. And because of that, I don't have too many regrets. So if they didn't ask me, that's okay. I said it anyway.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's it. It was never 10 minutes, but it certainly was interesting. It was not an hour.
Wasn't that 10 minutes?
It seems like it, doesn't it?
Can I tell you a funny story?
Sure.
So I was in Syracuse, New York. I think it was Syracuse. I don't remember. And I was teaching photographers, you know, professional photographers. And it was at the end of a really delicious meal at a great Italian restaurant, and the president of the association said, "John, you know, you've got the mic, and you know, if you can keep it to an hour, I'd appreciate it." No, I mean, they paid me to go teach them on. I wasn't just. These are professionals that were making their living photographing, and so I had a number of different programs that I offered to help them, you know, be successful. I mean, taking a good picture is part of it, Mark, but making a living by it is something else. I supported my family by being a photographer, put my kids through great colleges, and one person providing for a family. Not many photographers can do that. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I taught, but I'm sorry, getting away from the thing. So the guy said, "You got an hour to teach." And I said, "Okay, I'll try to keep it to an hour." And pretty engaging. And we've got all these great pictures that everybody's looking at. And I've got tricks for kids, shticks, that work so well. I mean, the kid still has to trust you. And so they were really engaged and interested in what I was saying. And I had their attention. And, you know, after I'm checking my clock all the time, my watch, and after, you know, 40 minutes, and a couple of them are starting looking away a little, and they said, "Well, I better ramp it up a little." And so I got a little more energy and laughed and pointed things out, got their attention, and then all of a sudden they started looking away, and a couple people got up and left. And I'm like, "Geez, well, I got 5 minutes left. I better wrap this up." And so finally, you know, it was like 65 minutes. I was 5 minutes over, and the president said, "John, thank you. We really need to wrap it up." And I finished, and that was fine. It was a Monday night when photographers usually don't have their studios open. So I jumped in my car afterwards. I said, "Well, that's neat. You know, dinner was at 6, and so I was done." Or, and then we finished at 7, and then I finished talking at 8 o'clock. I can watch Monday night football. So I'm driving back to the hotel, and looking at my watch, I said, "Oh, this is neat, you know, I've got plenty of time." And then I looked at the car clock. So my watch hadn't died. It was just dying a slow death. I had talked for 2 hours. It was good for me. Ah, I'm lucky they didn't yank me up.
Funny story. I'm a lay leader in the Lutheran church. I can do sermons if somebody invites me, you know, and I keep my sermons to 12 minutes. But when I was in lay school, they were talking about this, and they wanted us to ad lib a sermon so you could. We looked up some stuff, and we had some stuff, and I went up there and I thought of some great illustrations, and I saw some things when I was up there. And they said, "How long do you think you were up there, Mark?" And I said, "Oh, it was probably about 10 to 15 minutes." That was 34 minutes you just spoke in your 10 minutes.
Well, 34 minutes. Isn't passion wonderful?
Well, and it's that connection. You know, I felt as though I was connecting to those people. And so how could I not tell them the story that John Gardner told me about the time he talked for 2 hours? Or why should I deprive him of a great joke about my father and I? Interested, they're still connected.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, at those points, you're so subjectively involved that it's hard to extract yourself. And that's when I talk, I usually have three people in the audience help me. One of them reminds me to keep my language civil. The second one reminds me to stay on subject because I have a tendency to wander. And the third person's a clock keeper. And after that, you know, it's okay. Then I've got enough support.
Tattoos nobody sees, or
real important stuff, Mark. Real important.
Well, and you can see, this is going to sound like a bad example, when you take pictures of teenage girls, you have a connection there. They open up to you. Like if I started talking to them about something, they would never tell me anything, or you know, they'd keep me at a safe distance, which is a wise choice for a young woman. But they let you in, you know, and you can see that.
Do you know how I start things off with teenage girls? Oh, I'm very serious. I mean, and it's funny because you're sort of talking to me as a photographer and that what I'm doing is so special. Well, what I'm doing is special, but it's no different than a lay minister. It's no different than a teacher. It's no different than a dentist who has an ability to treat the whole person and not just the symptoms that you're bringing in or the particular need that you have. When a girl comes in, she's sitting there and the mother's often there. We talk for anybody. We talk, I don't know how long, sometimes 10, 15 minutes before we get up. I joke and say, and the talking takes longer than the photography. It doesn't usually, but we talk about a number of things. As I said, just like with a businessman, the last thing we talk about is the pictures. And with those teenagers, you know, who have so much pressure on them, the teenage girls particularly, well, we talk about what they do well and what they love. What they love. We even talk about, oh, what scares you? Oh, that's terrible. That's scary. That must really... And they realize that they can talk about these things. And then you know what I say to them? I say, you know, Casey, you're going to be really easy to photograph. And they look at me like in disbelief. And they said, why? I said, you are so natural. I said, you've got very beautiful features. Your eyes, the cheekbones, the color of your face. I said, the blemishes, don't worry about them. We get rid of them, and everybody's got them your age. I said, you know, you're strong. I said, and I got to tell you something. We have so many girls that come in here who and women who are cosmetically perfect. They've got, as an example, blonde hair, blue eyes, big you-know-whats, and tight waist, and pouty lips. And you know something? Most of those girls don't like any picture that anybody takes of them. And this girl says, why? I said, well, for a lot of them, they're trying to please someone else rather than be themselves. They don't know who they're supposed to be. They're trying to live according to someone else's expectations. And that's the stupidest thing that you could ever do in your life. I said, you're beautiful. I don't want you to look like your size too. I want you to be yourself and express yourself the way you are. And it's really sort of funny because the mother's sitting there going, yeah, listen to John, listen to John, you know? Well, sometimes the mothers say it too, but then I say, well, Mom, come here. I'm going to take a picture of you with your daughter. Oh, no, I don't like my hair. I said, listen to what you just said. So, yeah, I'm a lay minister.
Yeah, yeah. So, most unusual photograph you ever took? Is there a photograph that stands out as the one? Or the best? Give me some of the superlative descriptions.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to think I'm really hokey when I say this, Mark, but you understand. Well, at this point, maybe you will understand that it's the truth. Before I photograph anybody, I'm anxious. Look at all those awards over there. They don't amount to a hill of beans when I'm photographing somebody. That's all past. And I'm so anxious that, I mean, not overwhelmingly anxious, but I'm anxious that I'm not going to do the absolutely most incredible job on that photograph that I'm taking at the minute. And when we accomplish that and we do it, that's the best one I've ever taken. Sounds hokey, doesn't it?
That makes perfect sense. I mean, performers talk about that, this gut-wrenching stage fright before they give an Emmy-winning good scene in the film, and somebody asked him about that, and he says, I was vomiting before they said action, pulled it together, and, you know, channeled that character perfectly. So I can see how that would make sense then, because you're doing the same thing. It's kind of a performance.
Do you know what I did before your wedding to April? In the night before, I memorized everybody in your wedding party. I had the names written down, also in the back of the flash. I had the schedule internalized. I knew where we were going, what time. I visualized, pre-visualized what we were going to be doing. The morning of the wedding, I ran 4 miles. I lifted weights, did calisthenics, focused the whole time I'm thinking about you. And then I took half an hour after my shower to lie down, cool down, and just get in the zone. And then I was off. Yeah. It's a performance. It's an athletic event. It's something that I need to be incredibly good at. Not just for you, but for me too. That's what I expect of myself.
What do you do when somebody puts up a wall, or the whole family, or the whole wedding party puts up a wall and says, you know, John, we appreciate your performance, but we just want pictures?
You know, that's their right. There's nothing I can do about that.
Did it ever happen? Somebody said, you know, we're going to, you know, you don't have to run out of the place. Just try to stay in the background or something.
Sure. And okay, a couple different examples. And once I did that, you know, photographing a wedding or something like that. And then as soon as I could see that somebody needed something and they needed somebody to take control, I did it very diplomatically. And all of a sudden, a trust was developed. And the people let me take more charge. But I respected their wishes for me to stay in the background and not be, you know, a director. There was one time I was photographing a family, and the wife was there with 3 young kids, maybe from ages 5 up until 10 or so, and they're waiting, and the father's late. And he shows up, it's for a family portrait, and he comes in. He had just been shopping at a clothing store, had all his expensive clothes, and he was an important guy, you know. And I said, hey, how you doing? We've been waiting. And he said, look, I'm here. I'm sorry that I'm a little late, but I really don't want to be here. You just tell me what you want me to do, when to smile, and I'll perform as necessary. And I looked at him, and I said, you wait right now. I said, do you think you're doing this for me? I said, look over here. You've got a wife and 3 adoring kids that are beautiful, that care a lot about the pictures, but even more about their family. So I'm going to tell you something. I'm not in charge. I'm putting the kids in charge, and they're going to tell you what they expect of you and what they need you to do. And this guy, he is a doctor. This guy just went, and he behaved very well after that. It's not about me. I'm a facilitator, you know. I'm somebody that can help direct a little. But the performance is all about them. So, yeah, there have been people that have been difficult, and I've had times where I've really had to deal with things that have been tough. But it's not about me. You know, it's all about making things work for my client the best way that I can. And if I don't agree with somebody at some point, unless it's an ethical decision, I'll do what they need me to do. As long as it's not a, you know, as I said, a moral or an ethical compromise.
And you can teach this, you instruct this, and people who you taught, you see them employing some of the things you told them, and they get it.
Mark, you know the answer to that. Some yes, some no. A lot of times, my employees, oh my gosh, I mean, I'm a loving person in the camera room, and I'm a dictator when it comes to being a boss. I'm German, holy smoly. This is the way you do it. You know, I'll allow creative, you know, freedom in some ways, but here are the procedures that we follow. This is how we do things. This is the schedule. These are the reasons. We look at details. We look at quality. And a lot of people really don't like me when they're working here. And they come back years later and they thank me. It took me a while. I mean, one of the biggest regrets I ever had in business was it took me until age 51 to realize that one of the biggest mistakes an employer can make is to try to make his employees happy. Sounds terrible. You can't make anybody happy. An employer, a good employer, provides a healthy, safe, productive work environment, energized, supports his employees, supervises them well, gives them opportunities to grow. It's up to them to become happy. So, yeah, I was going crazy because employees were controlling me all the time. And if they didn't like me, then it was my fault. And I went to a therapist. His name was John Grindlinger. Oh, my God, looked just like Jay Leno. He's a psychiatrist. Had a high voice and funnier than him. He's brilliant. I said, what are you trying to make your employee? And, you know, he said, whoa. And after that, well, a lot of them still don't like me while they're working here, but...
But
that's
it. That makes sense.